Welcome to the Goddess Divine podcast. Join me as I unveil the stories of goddesses from across time and cultures. We will dive deep into the archetypes and energies that these goddesses embody, and we'll explore the practical applications of goddess wisdom in our daily lives. We'll discuss how to connect with the divine feminine through rituals, meditation, creative expression, and acts of conscious living. Whether you're a seasoned practitioner of goddess spirituality or just beginning your journey, this podcast is for you. Everyone, welcome to the Goddess Divine podcast. I am really excited for you to be joining me for today's episode. I have all of my notes here, and I'm super stoked to talk to you about the dark goddess. If you are super interested in everything related to goddesses, or you're just getting started and you're doing some cursory research on goddesses, whether it's online, whether it's through blogs or whatever social media platform that you use, TikTok, which I don't have or use, so I don't know what's going on there, but on YouTube, you've probably come across dark goddesses, at least the terminology, or maybe even dark feminine divine. I think I've recently seen that as well. So maybe you're, you know, really interested in, you know, who are the dark goddesses? What do they stand for? Are they dangerous? Should they be feared? Should I work with one? So on and so forth. So I want to just give you my perspective based off of my research, but I've also had just limited interactions with what we with a goddess who we do classify as dark goddess. So I'm not sure if I had told this story. I think I did on the first episode. If not, I'm just going to do a quick review that one of the first goddesses that I met that I did not call in, but who came into my dream and knocked on my door to my house was the goddess Morgan Le Fay. Now, if you are familiar with like King Arthur and all of the stories of Avalon, you probably are aware of her being this dark sorceress, right? And of course, she's totally fiction from our perspective, but I'm gonna say she's not fiction from my experience. I did not call her in. I actually, at the time, had been studying about the Morrigan, and I really loved her stories and what she stood for. And I didn't know if any of this was real. And before I went to bed, I asked aloud, like, if this is real, please show me. I would love to meet her and work with her and learn from her. And then that night I had the dream where somebody was pounding on my front door. I walked to my front door and then I heard this screeching howl. And this woman who was dressed in all black, like, threw me up against the wall, and she was screeching still and howling. And it really scared the crap out of me. And when I was in the bed, I rolled over because I was so tired, and I felt a presence in the room, and I asked, "Who's here?" And I expected to hear the Morrigan, but I did not hear that. I heard Morgan Le Fay. And I was so shocked, like, what the hell's going on here? And of course, I didn't know what I was doing at the time, but she started to appear in my meditations. And so I spent quite a bit of time for at least a month, maybe two or three, conversing with her about various topics. And I really appreciated her viewpoint on things. And I had a lot of trust with her. It felt very loyal. Anyway, that was really my entrance into dark goddesses. I will talk to you a little bit more about this as we proceed through today's episode, but there are some people who only prefer to work with dark goddesses, and I think that that's fine, but I do think we should talk about their role, what their offerings are, how they help, and whether or not they're dangerous or scary or, you know, all of that great stuff. So from our perspective, dark goddesses, they are figures in mythology and folklore, and they do embody aspects of the divine feminine that are traditionally associated with transformation, destruction, rebirth, and of course, the mysteries of life and death. They are traditionally seen as powerful and very independent forces, and they do represent the darker or the more challenging aspects of existence. But these are really essential for growth and renewal, right? Throughout history, the dark goddess has been very much so feared. Goddess worship in the past, as we know, when Christianity became the official religion of the empire, goddesses themselves were, through time, branded as witches. And of course, there was this wide belief that witches were, you know, they were believed to kill newborn babies, destroy the crops. My favorite one is that they engaged in sexual intercourse with the devil, right? So there's these, you know, these overarching beliefs about goddesses. So of course, they've been demonized and ostracized, and their roles in society, in worship, in spirituality, they've changed through time. And their roles have been really challenged by the patriarchy. The dark goddess is often, if you do your research, she's often associated with the underworld, with transformation. I would say transformation occurs in the underworld. She's also associated with death and rebirth, and she does rule over everything that we fear. What I love the best about the dark goddess is that she's a no-nonsense goddess, and I tend to work with goddesses who are very no-nonsense. In other words, they just don't take any shit from you. So excuses, you might as well not even try with them. But there is a major destructive aspect of the dark goddess. But her destructive aspects, they teach us that there is death within life and that we're constantly evolving and changing. One thing I remember from channeling the goddess Hecate, who is considered a dark goddess, you know, when I asked her, like, well, why are we here on Earth? And it was very simple to her. She said, to evolve. Everything is in a constant state of change, you know, and we are too. We're not any different. It's just that we avoid it and we're very afraid of it. Before we keep going, I wanted to quickly address this whole concept of dark and light, right? Because we have to remember that the divine spectrum holds not just the light, but a powerful darkness too. But the concepts of dark and light and good and evil, they come from the influence of this monotheistic religion. So from a monotheistic standpoint, the dark is associated with evil and negative, something that is, you know, very scary and shameful, or very very quote-unquote dark, as in no good, right? But this belief or this association is quite misleading, but it does influence how we perceive deity or deities, right? You see this in media a lot, but of course it's been beaten to our head. We've been indoctrinated into this belief specifically through Christianity. The idea of a goddess being dark or light, it's a very recent development, so you have to also think that it, or at least recognize that it doesn't have a real place in ancient culture. But in modern culture, that's our new interpretation, and there are reasons for that interpretation. That's why studying the history is so important. Dividing the gods into dualistic and often opposing natures is very much in line with our modern concepts of good and evil. So keep that in mind as you keep going down this work and as you're journeying with the goddess, right? Because sometimes when you do your research online, there are some people who I think just, it comes from lack of experience or lack of interaction with some of these goddesses that we term dark. They try to project their fear onto you, right? So don't work with the goddess Kali or Hel, especially don't work with the demon Lilith. Right. So obviously, I would say take this with a grain of salt. Do your own historical research on these goddesses and how their stories were distorted. I'm going to write this down because there's something that I wanted to add that my guide said to me just 2 days ago about this. OK, don't want to forget. So from my perspective, the dark goddess contains a group of deities that have similar functions, but all relating to transformation. These deities in particular, they challenge us, and they do represent the things that we are most afraid of. Are they dangerous? Are we supposed to be afraid of them? Well, that depends. You have to remember also that deities don't play by human rules, and they don't have human moralities. We can't necessarily apply human expectations onto them. So just as an example here, if we were thinking about, let's think about spirit. There are different types of spirits or different species of spirits. So for us today, let's just think we have elementals, right? Whose vibrations might be a little bit lower or more closer to earth, or denser. That's a better way of putting it, denser. And then we have angels, right? And when we think of angels, at least from a Christian standpoint, they're only what? Light and love, high vibration, etc. And then if we think of archangels, again, only light and love. If we think of ancestors, well, I'm not so sure because I don't have those interactions. So to be honest, I don't know how to define them and their behaviors. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I'm missing here. I said ancestors. Oh, okay. Other galactic species, as you know, Andromedans, we have the Lyrans, Arcturians. What's the other one I'm thinking? The Nine Sisters, Pleiadians. There we go. And you know what? I don't work with them, so I couldn't tell you. Are they only light and love, or how do they converse? What topics do they breach? What is their behavior like? So these are things we have to really think about when we begin to work with different types of spirits. So we can't apply our beliefs about angels and how they interact with us onto other deities or onto other types of spirits. I'm going to give you one little example here. Goddesses, they get mad at you. Deities get mad at you, okay? When you are developing a relationship with whatever deity it is, there is an understanding there of commitment and devotion. Like, you're going to do the work. You're going to do the assignments. You're going to put forth your best effort. They're going to get mad at you if you ain't going to do the work. And they don't want to hear it, especially dark goddesses. They don't want to hear it. And it's not just dark goddesses here. So let me give you a very quick example. When was this? A couple of months ago, I was talking to the goddess that I am learning from, and I've been learning from for months now, is the goddess Hera, who is Hellenic. And Athena was there as well, because I'm also learning from her. And I was very frustrated about something. And I felt like I wasn't being heard or understood. And I said something that came out, and it wasn't rude, but it certainly was taken that way. And I understand why. And I heard very fiercely, so loudly, and she was so pissed. Athena said something to me and I was like, oh shit. Oh my God. Okay. They get mad. They get frustrated with you. They're there to guide you. They can see things holistically, right? We have a very limited vision of things. So all of this to say, before I go on some wild tangent that I'm not going to go on, is that these relationships are different. The expectations are different, and we can't expect them to play by a certain rule or a certain certain rules that we want to project onto them. That's not how this works. So you have to kind of keep this in mind. But if I go back to rules, before I go back to rules, are they dangerous? Are they to be feared? They're not dangerous. Only if you consider change and destruction to be dangerous. Then yeah, I guess you could classify them as that, because they oversee change. They want to help you evolve. They want you to confront your fears. They want you to overcome your obstacles. They want you to be better for you, not for anybody else, but for you. But that takes work. And it takes a lot of strength to look at your inner self and to confront things that you have been running away from for a very long time. So in that aspect, sure, maybe you're afraid of them. Maybe they can be considered dangerous, but in the full spectrum of things, not really. They're there to teach and guide you and help you to see things and from a bigger perspective. So going back to rules, there are certain rules when working with goddesses in general that are specific to them and the culture that they're in. So for example, here again, learning from Hera, I don't like to say working with because I'm learning from her. Learning from Hera, the rules of goddess worship in the Hellenic world, in the ancient Hellenic world, how it was done, what's the proper way? Don't approach me this way. Don't combine me with other goddesses this way. Make sure you're clean when you come talk to me. All of these rules that I didn't know, and I feel so freaking ignorant here. I've learned so much. I've learned so much about ancient Greek worship and religion, if you want to call it that. But it's really important that you follow those rules of worship when you approach certain goddesses. It's your responsibility to learn that. And you learn that by studying, of course, their ancient history, but also as you begin to interact with them, there's certain things they'll start to show you, like, do this, don't do that. Here, this is what's appropriate, and so on and so forth. Okay. When we think of the dark goddesses again, let's go back to just dark goddesses as a whole, okay? And I wanted to say, you know, Athena's not considered a dark goddess, neither is Hera, but, you know, they get mad. They get mad. So the dark goddesses, they are known, or they're classified as agents of change. And change is scary, and change is certainly messy. But they do help us navigate through whatever changes these are. For them, they do utilize destruction as a catalyst. And change is a process of destroying in order to move forward, or at least recreate our parts of ourselves. Change usually involves a journey. Now, I think it involves a journey to the underworld. And we do see this in Joseph Campbell's work, right? His proposition of the hero's journey, where the hero is journeying into the underworld after answering the call, but they do have the assistance of a mentor or of a guide. And that's where I think the dark goddesses come in for us. When we enter into this underworld where we face temptations and challenges and overcome obstacles, and then we kind of have like that final ordeal that we have to overcome, right? And it's usually after this ordeal that the hero gains something substantial, whether it's knowledge or a resurrection. They undergo some sort of resurrection of some sort. But then the hero returns to their normal world with all of the knowledge that they gained, all the experience that they gained, or if you want to call it treasure, right? Or they come back as a new person, having completely shifted their perceptions about life and themselves. I also think that in order for us to move forward, in order for us to recreate ourselves, we do journey into this underworld, and we do see this in various mythologies, right? Where somebody is having to go to an underworld and overcome certain obstacles to learn and grow. Now, one great ancient story is the story of the Sumerian goddess Inanna, who's also known as Ishtar. I love her story. Because, and you can read this for yourself, it's a very short story, and there you could find this in printed books as well, but I believe it's written in cuneiform, where you have Inanna descending into the underworld. You know, so in this story, rather than gaining a treasure like the hero does, she actually is forced to relinquish the symbols of her status and relinquish the symbols of her pride to, you know, really dissolve her ego-supporting illusions, which I think is also very beautiful, because it's almost like unpacking of the self as you're removing layer upon layer upon layer to really see who you are. It's funny to talk about this because as I'm saying this, I'm thinking about a message that Mother Mary gave to me specifically about me really learning who I am. She, as she was trying to help me through each layer, she likened it to the layer of an onion. And she was like, once we start peeling away the layers, we'll finally get to the center to see who you really are and who you've been all along. And I think that's what happens when you have a relationship with the dark goddess. But it doesn't only have to happen with the dark goddess, hence Mother Mary in this case. So the dark goddess, she requires us to look at very difficult things in our lives. And we do have to embark on some sort of journey to conquer them. But the great news is that they guide us along the way. They teach us, they challenge us, and they lead us to some sort of rebirth or resurrection. What's scary about this journey is that it induces a lot of fear of the unknown, right? We've learned through societal conditioning that the darkness is where all the bad things happen. But we have to, I think we know, if you're listening to this today, that, well, it's not where the bad things happen. It's where you become enlightened, right? And you start to learn, you know, why you see things the way you see things in the world, why you interpret things, but also you get to the root of your true identity. And I think that's how the dark goddess steps into your life. She helps you with those things. So for me, I look at it, or I embrace them more, as a privilege. But working with them or learning from them, it requires you to be open. It requires you to be, it requires this deep authenticity and this deep honesty. And that can be challenging for a lot of people because, again, it's easier for a lot of us to feel comfortable. We want the continuity of what is because it's stable, it's consistent. But that's not what she brings. That's not what she offers. She wants to disrupt the status quo. That's probably the best way, I think, of putting it. I also wanted to add in today's talk a little bit from Carl Jung, just a little bit. He was a Swiss psychiatrist and psychoanalyst who had this whole concept of the shadow, right? The shadow self. That's where you see all these books and manuals today of shadow work, which is it's actually extremely helpful. But I did want to pull one quote from his work that talks about this, shadow, because the dark goddess, I think, is the epitome of one's shadow, or at least helps you get to understand your shadow self. And he says, the shadow is a moral problem that challenges the whole ego personality. For no one can become conscious of the shadow without considerable moral effort. To become conscious of it involves recognizing the dark aspects of the personality as present and real. This act is an essential condition for any kind of self-knowledge, and therefore, as a rule, we meet it with considerable resistance. I think for us, you know, when we come from a patriarchal society, we have this patriarchal theological construct of sin and evil, right? As these very disparate parts of ourselves that have to be repressed, have to be ignored. They're shameful, they're embarrassing. But Carl Jung offers a system where we have to actually begin to integrate one's shadow. So he's not only asking us to stare into the face of our own darker parts of ourselves, he asks us to embrace this as a natural element of ourselves. And of course, all of that is in direct opposition to the Christian doctrine of evil as this construct of Satan, which of course at all costs has to be avoided. It's those parts of ourselves that has to be swept under the rug, put in a closet, close the door, a box, you know, lock it, throw away the key. But that's not what he's saying. And I think that's where, again, we see the dark goddess step in to help and guide us to confront those darker aspects, to get to the root, but learn that they are a part of ourselves, because being on Earth, we embody, you know, we become dualistic beings. It would be very, should I use the word ignorant? I don't know if that's the appropriate word here. Unrealistic. There we go. Unrealistic to believe that we are only all light and that we are only all darkness. We're both. And that's the experience that we're having here on Earth. So Jung is like, let's just be a little bit realistic here. Okay. So I just, you know, want to move on to who the dark goddesses are. At least who we have all kind of agreed upon as being the dark goddess to some extent. There's probably more here that I'm listing, but just a few for our purposes. So here are the most recognized dark goddesses. Of course, in Hinduism, we have the goddess Kali. I remember when I was a kid, my sisters and I used to watch Indiana Jones. I think it was the Temple of Doom on repeat. And I remember they were worshiping Kali Ma. So my sisters used to go around and pretend like Kali Ma, Kali Ma. We used to do that all the time, which is very interesting when I think about it. But we have Kali, and she's a fierce and formidable goddess who's often depicted with multiple arms, holding weapons, and severed heads. So a very scary appearance here. But she does represent time, destruction, and this transformative power of death. And she's also associated with liberation and the destruction of ignorance and the ego. So it's extremely powerful. I will say I have called upon her once in my life and I didn't know if she would come. I was really having like a dark night of the soul. And as me, just speaking about me, I am somebody who does well with tough love. I need somebody to be very direct, give it to me straight, don't sugarcoat it. You know, that's how I work best. That's how I understand best. And that's what I appreciate. And she was very much forthcoming, very direct, but also her energy is so profoundly strong, it gave me like a migraine. But she's amazing. Let me just put it like that. I didn't feel like she was anything to be afraid of. There was such an enormous power to her being. Next, we have the Morrigan from Celtic mythology. And she's a pretty complex goddess, and she's associated with war, fate, sovereignty, and magic. I would also say the fairies. She's often depicted as a crow or raven, and she's considered a protector of warriors and a very strong symbol of feminine power. Next, we have Hecate, and I think Hecate is probably worshipped worldwide by everybody I can imagine. There are millions of books written about her. I love talking to her. She was a goddess that approached me in a dream, which was spectacular, but in a very different way than how we traditionally see her. And she is extremely picky. I just want to be honest with you in terms of who she comes forth to help. And she's quite honest about that. So, of course, we know of her in Greek mythology. She is associated with witchcraft, magic. She's a goddess of the crossroads and of the underworld. She's often depicted as a triple-headed figure, symbolizing her connection to the past, present, and the future, as well as her role as a guide in the realm of spirits. Next, from Jewish mythology, we have the goddess Lilith, who I really love her. I've had the opportunity to channel her, which you'll hear on this show, and it was amazing to hear her words and what she stands for and the distortion of her and her story. This is what I wanted to bring to you guys. So when I was talking to my guide about some of the stuff, he said, you know, make sure that you give the goddesses a voice. Make sure you let them speak their true stories, because they have deliberately been distorted by man through time to demote their power, to minimize them, to reduce them to demons or something really dark and irrelevant and harmful and scary, right? So when you begin to, when you do devotional work with a goddess, when you commit yourself, you will learn so much more about them than what is in books. Sometimes there's limited information on some of these goddesses, and a lot of it's going to be through your experience, your direct experience with them when they start to show you things or reveal, I just heard that word, reveal more of themselves to you through time. So Lilith is a figure from Jewish folklore, and she's often portrayed as a demon. Right? She's associated with themes of independence, sexuality, rebellion, and she represents the untamed and wild aspects of femininity. I think one reason I really connect with her is this whole idea of independence and rebellion. And I like that, because for most of us who live in a patriarchal society, it's frowned upon to be a woman and to be very independent with no codependency on somebody, let alone a man. And really speaking up for yourself and standing up for your truth is also at times frowned upon. And she makes sure that you stand up for yourself and for others. Next, we have Hel from Norse mythology, and she rules over the realm of the dead, also called Helheim. I'm probably mispronouncing that. She's depicted as half alive and half dead, symbolizing the duality of life and death. She is a figure associated with endings, transitions, and the cycle of rebirth. And lastly, I'm just going to include the Mesopotamian goddess Ereshkigal. And she is in the underworld story with Inanna. And please do not crucify me if I have this wrong. I don't know why I believe that she's Inanna's sister. Yeah, don't crucify me. Anyway, she is the queen of the underworld, and she presides over the realm of the dead. And she's often depicted as this very powerful and fearsome goddess who commands respect and authority, and she certainly does, especially in that story where Inanna is forced to relinquish everything as she gets deeper into the underworld, and she goes to Ereshkigal, and Ereshkigal punishes her for something that she did, which I'm not going to give you the whole story because you can read it and it's fabulous. Anyway, these dark goddesses, amongst many others, there's others that I'm not going to go through here. As I said, Morgan Le Fay is considered a dark goddess as well. They do play vital roles in their respective mythologies. They do embody I would say the darker aspects of femininity, power, and, you know, the mysteries of existence that are often overlooked or misunderstood in a lot of mainstream narratives. They are incredibly helpful. They challenge us to be better human beings. I swear I'm hearing this as I'm speaking to you. And I also am hearing, like, they draw you nearer to your shadow, but for the purposes of overcoming and for learning to actually truly love yourself from a holistic standpoint. Anyway, I really hope that this was helpful for you guys today. If you are just stepping into working with deity, I know there's so much to learn and explore, and it can be extremely overwhelming, and I felt the same way too. But ask yourself, what is it that you're trying to learn? What are you trying to heal specifically? And then you'll be guided to the direct goddess, whether it is a dark goddess or whether it isn't. One isn't better than the other. And also, I would like to say, I do think that there are quote unquote shadow aspects to every single deity, right? So, I mean, yes, some are more attuned to the underworld than others, especially given their historical narratives. But go with the goddess that most aligns with what it is you're trying to learn and to heal from. Sometimes you'll be presented with a different goddess that is better aligned for you. As I said, remember my story of calling upon the Morrigan, but no. It was actually Morgan Le Fay who was better aligned for me at that time to help me see things when it was a really hard time, when it was a very dark time, but also really, to be honest with you guys, she was a companion for me. It's like I needed that type of support during that time. So to end the conversation, if you are interested, I will have some sources below of books that I have actually read on the Dark Goddess and authors that I trust. If you have any questions, you know where to find me. Don't hesitate to ask. I'm really here to help you guys. Anyway, have a great morning, afternoon, evening, week, and month, and we'll be back soon. All right, take care. Bye-bye.